Turning our attention to cranes now here in Wisconsin with a couple of guests. I'm Larry Mueller. My two guests, Joan Garland, who's outreach coordinator, and Lacey, who's long-term crane research coordinator for the International Crane Foundation at Baraboo, Wisconsin. Great to have both of them with us today to talk about cranes and to talk about the foundation and certainly about the crane count that's coming up this Saturday. And we're taking your questions and comments as well as we move along today. Maybe you have a question about the count. Maybe you have a question about the foundation, or maybe you have a question just about cranes in general. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Joan Garland, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you along. And Ann Lacey, thank you so much as well. Thank you for coming.
Good morning. Thank you.
How's the Crane Foundation doing?
Excellent. Excellent. We're looking forward to opening weekend.
Yeah. And Joan, you want to talk about it?
Sure. Actually, tomorrow is the first day, the opening day of our season. And we will be open every day beginning tomorrow until October 31st. So people are invited to come out. We open at 9 a.m., close at 5 p.m. And right now for the weekends, we will be offering guided tours at 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. And then beginning Memorial Day, those tours will be offered every day until late Labor Day, and then we'll go back to the weekend tours until the end of October.
And what do people see on these tours?
Well, the Crane Foundation is a wonderful opportunity in that it is the only place in the world where you have the chance to see all 15 species of cranes. So all 15 crane species are exhibited at the Crane Foundation, including we have a pair of whooping cranes in a natural wetland setting. And then just recently last year, we completed a brand new exhibit for our African crane species. So you'll have a chance to see all four native African species in out in wetland habitats. So that's it's a wonderful chance to come and see the new exhibits.
Well, I tell you, and some of them are, well, in fact, they're all beautiful birds, but some of them are just absolutely spectacular, I think.
They're the tropical fish of the bird world.
Yeah, you're right, Ann. I think you're right.
Some of them are.
What's the most colorful?
Colorful. The African crowned cranes would have to.
Yeah.
They are the prince and princesses of the crane world, to be certain.
And now you do research on cranes.
Yep. I say ICF opens to the public to showcase all the cranes of the world this weekend, but our crane research starts immediately, right when the cranes come back from their winter break.
Yeah.
And that's as early as February. And there's cranes on nests already, so.
Yeah. Which cranes are on nests?
Sandhills.
Sandhills
are
on
there. Not whooping cranes yet, but we're hopeful.
And the sandhills and the hoopers are our cranes.
Yep, there are only two North American cranes
that we have here in Wisconsin and in North America in general.
North America, yep.
Well, I'll tell you what, Phil in Hebron, Illinois has a question for you, so we'll just go right to Phil. Hi, Phil, thank you for calling.
Good morning, excellent topic. I have a question for you. I'm right below Lake Geneva in Illinois, and every year when I see the sandhills go over, I will get a handful of cranes, maybe 8 or 10, and then the aerial armada will follow those 8 or 10 maybe 6 or 8 days later. It happens every year. Am I seeing scouts, or are those first cranes just real go-getters?
Well, what do we got, Ann?
I think you have the go-getters. Yeah, you're right in the center of the flyway of the eastern greater Sandhill cranes, returning back to Wisconsin, the UP of Michigan, and central and northern Minnesota. And so those birds are coming back from their winter break, and they're kind of funneled through the Chicagoland area because of the lake. And so they're largely breeding birds. You're probably seeing some of them may have wintered in Indiana or Illinois. So those might be those early birds, so to speak. And the rest are coming from further south, perhaps.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join us, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. So we've got the foundation opening. And at the same time, just about the same time, we've got the crane count. And talk about the history of that a little bit, Joan, and tell us the background and bring us up to the present.
Sure. The count actually started back in 1974, and at the time, it just started in one county here in Wisconsin. The count began in Columbia County, Wisconsin, and it started actually as a high school biology project, and it has since grown to include the we still have Columbia County participating, but now it involves over 3,000 volunteers spread out over 100 counties in five different states. So the five states currently participating in Crane Count include Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, Iowa, and Michigan. So the count has really grown from, again, just beginning this as a kind of a research project with a school group to involving 3,000 volunteers. And we have seen the numbers of sandhills, of course, increasing in the state. Last year, around 2,000 pairs of sandhill cranes were counted in the state of Wisconsin. So.
And we're looking back in the 30s, I think we had, 25 pairs or something like that?
Aldo Leopold estimated 25 breeding pairs in Wisconsin in the 30s. And I can point to several wetlands, individual wetlands in Wisconsin that might have that many breeding pairs now. So it's a real success story for
conservation. Yeah, and how's it happened? How's it?
A confluence of good events, including the Great Depression actually helped out a lot. Creation of national wildlife refuges at the time that people left areas like Nisida and Horicon, and the cessation of market hunting. Mm-hmm. And the great soils and wetlands of Wisconsin, that is really what those sandhills need for nesting. And though they like to forage in those uplands, so the combination of those two things really allowed the population to grow.
And what about the count? What's the value of that count? Now, you've got 30-some years of, or thereabouts, of tracking. Anne, go to you first. What?
It is a great example of citizen science. These are people, just for the love of cranes and the outdoors, that come out and look and listen for cranes, but it is data that we can use for many purposes. We have used it in some of our work to try to deter cranes from damaging our agricultural fields. Mm-hmm. We have used it to show the expansion of the population. It's not growing out of control, as I've heard some people say. It's more expanding back into areas that it has been historically. And these are all things that we can show with Crane Count. But it's also a wonderful educational tool.
Exactly. It's a great opportunity. We have many families involved in the count. We also have school groups participating, individuals. So it's a really wonderful opportunity to get out into the wetlands, into nature. The count begins at 5:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's a two-hour count from 5:30 to 7:30 a.m. this coming Saturday, April 17th. And the way the count is organized is that each county within the five-state area has a coordinator, and that coordinator helps to get the various individuals in that county set up with different sites in which to count. So it is really, as Anne was saying, it's an incredible education opportunity to go out, have a chance to see and hear the sandhill cranes as well as many other species out there in the environment.
And can people still get involved, or is it too late for?
No, absolutely. That's one of the main reasons we're here, to definitely encourage folks. If you're interested in participating in the Crane Count, one way to get involved is you can go to the Crane Foundation website and simply type in cranecount.org, www.cranecount.org. And there's information there on how to participate, or you can also email cranecount@savingcranes.org. So we're definitely interested in adding more folks to the count.
What is that, cranecount@savingcranes.org?
Correct.
All right. I'm just writing that down.
Okay. Larry's going to count this year.
Got it. Let's go to Steve in Fox Point. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I love your show, and I'm happy that the Crane Foundation is doing what they're doing. I'm sympathetic with my hunter conservation friends who are farmers on the east end of Horicon, and we all like to see the sandhills coming back, but we also see some many tens of thousands of dollars of crop damage. Sandhills are supposed to be really good to eat. I'm wondering when we'll be able to hunt them and help the farmers out a little bit without damaging the population.
Go ahead.
That is a great question. There's a lot of things that are involved with that, so I'll try to kind of piece it apart. Sandhill cranes can do enormous damage, especially with the costs of corn these days, both to both as a commodity and to put it in the ground costs a lot. And cranes can come into fields and they see those little green sprouts that indicate a yummy morsel underneath, and they can clear out a lot of cornfields. And one of the projects that I have been working on for many years at the Crane Foundation is to help directly with that problem. And we've been working with a manufacturer that has developed a chemical taste deterrent that mm-hmm. farmers can buy themselves, put it where they need it, where they know that they will have cranes, where they won't have cranes, and solve this problem themselves, so it's kind of out in the marketplace rather than a kind of a government program where they might mm-hmm. not get the compensation that they feel that they deserve. The company that sells this and has developed this product is called Arkion Life Science, ARKION.com is their website, and mm-hmm. you can get all the information there. And we really encourage people, if they are farmers themselves or they know people that have suffered crop damage, to go there or to contact their local ag agent, and they can buy that right now and put it out in their fields. As far as
and it works.
It works. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. As long as that chemical is on the corn, it's applied correctly by the corn grower. It works like a charm. I've actually seen cranes spit out corn seed. They'll stay in the cornfield. They'll eat waste corn. They'll eat bugs and whatever else, agricultural pests. So they could be a benefit. But at least they will not damage that corn. But as far as crane hunting, that is still an option for Wisconsin. There is a management plan that has been developed for the Eastern Greater Sandhill Crane in the Eastern Flyway. The cranes that are in Wisconsin go through two different flyways. So there's two flyways that have to help develop this management plan. Once a management plan is developed, then it's up to individual states to vote on whether or not they will agree to a crane hunt. And then that's another process of how many and where mm-hmm. a hunt will occur. So that's a little bit further down the line. But as far as hunting and crop damage goes, they're really not connected in that to stop crop damage, you would have to decimate the population. And no one would agree that that's a good idea. There's plenty of sandhill cranes in the Eastern Flyway, and we have many in here in Wisconsin. So I doubt that anyone would argue that we could hunt them sustainably once it comes to that decision. But it really doesn't have anything to do with the crop damage issue. They're really separate. So, that we like to separate out those things and have a public forum on the hunting and let people know that there's a solution for crop damage out there.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Steve. Appreciate it. Jim in Wisconsin Rapids, we're on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. See, I drive the central part of the state about 3,000 miles a month back and forth and have an opportunity to see a lot of cranes. I am kind of curious. One is, what exactly does the NACIDA facility do? And as an aside, last fall, for about a week, I saw upwards of 200 cranes congregating in one field area, apparently getting ready to fly south. But I'll take the question off or the answer off the air since I have a seemingly bad connection.
Thanks. All right. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Jim. Drive safely. You're driving right through the epicenter. It's Crane Central in that corridor of Wisconsin. And crane count is actually one of the tools that tells us that is an area of very high density of cranes. You asked about NACIDA. That's a National Wildlife Refuge. And that's the area where ICF is cooperating with many other entities to reintroduce the whooping crane, so the other North American species. And I can let Joan talk about that.
In addition, I should bring up, in addition, of course, to the sandhill cranes that you'll see during the crane count, there is the remote possibility that folks may also see whooping cranes. We have been participating in the Crane Foundation, along with 9 other partner organizations, has been participating in reintroducing whooping cranes to the state of Wisconsin. This is a migratory species. They migrate down to Florida, to the Gulf Coast of Florida for the winter time. And currently within that population, we have 103 whooping cranes. Right now, about 80 to possibly 90 of them have returned to Wisconsin. The others are still en route. And so most of those cranes Nisida National Wildlife Refuge, as Anne was mentioning, is the release site for most of those released cranes. So many of the birds, many of the whooping cranes are going to be in and around the Nisida Wildlife Refuge and surrounding areas.
Excellent. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call, Jim. And let's turn to Travis in Grantsburg next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. This message is for both Anne.
Hi, Travis.
Hi. I'm just basically calling to see how the Briggs Royal birds are doing and how everything's coming along. You had mentioned that you have some birds that are on nests, and here's to see which pairs those are, and just out doing some sharp tail work and happen to hear you on the radio.
For those of you listening out there, I know Travis because he was one of my interns several years ago. We have a great internship program in many of our departments at the International Crane Foundation to train educators, aviculturists, and field biologists. And Travis is out there field biologisting, I hope, and continuing on the great experience that he had at the Crane Foundation. And one of what he mentioned, Briggsville, Wisconsin, is where our long-term crane research project takes place. And so we have been working in this small little unincorporated town just between Portage and Wisconsin Dells. And one of the bedrock of that program is that we put colored leg bands on a lot of the birds. They're breeding birds and then their chicks year to year. So we get a lot of information on those birds, productivity, longevity, dispersal, even divorce. I'm sorry. Mm. Sorry, folks. They do pair for life most of the time. But we can document divorce in cranes, and they're still doing much better than people at only about 5%. So, okay. So that's some of the research that Travis helped us with, and that long-term research that I helped coordinate. And it's just a great body of knowledge that we're using to help inform us. And yeah, some of the birds are on a nest right now, and we're hoping to have chicks visible and maybe within the next 2 weeks.
Next 2 weeks already. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Travis. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. My guests today, Joan Garland and Ann Lacey of the International Crane Foundation. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking cranes with Joan Garland and Ann Lacey of the International Crane Foundation. A Dousman listener wondered if there's a flyway or a throughway for sandhill cranes through that area, through the Dousman area.
Boy, I'm ashamed to say I'm not sure where Dousman is.
I'm trying to think of the exact location. I don't know. I would have to.
Is it near Lake Mills?
Yeah, it's over that way, I believe.
If that's where it is in that corridor, there's a lot of birds that go through there in the spring when cranes return. In the fall, mm-hmm. it's more, and Jim had asked about fall congregations. Nisida is a big area. Central Wisconsin is another big fall staging area before birds continue south in November.
Okay. Let's turn to Rose in Madison next. Ross, hello. Thank you for calling.
Oh, that's happened before. Okay, I had several questions. I'm a avid rider on the Glacial Gremlin Trail, or user. Last year, I noticed 4 bonded pairs in a 8-mile stretch. One pair had lost their nest washed, and then there were 3 others that had babies. The other part of it is that I started writing again in 05, didn't really notice any birds in 05 and 06, started noticing some in 07, and now it's just an incredibly exponential increase, it almost seems. Is there something going on that the population has exploded like this?
It's due to the nature of the cranes. There's a lot of breeding pairs in Wisconsin, and again, crane count is such an invaluable tool because it helps inform us of that. But cranes are highly territorial. The same pair, the bonded pairs that you were noticing, will return to the same area year after year. And so there's a lot of birds that don't have a territory. They're old enough to breed. They may even be paired, but they don't have a nesting area. And they have to use the landscape opportunistically. So they will stay a day, a week, a month in any one place and move around. And I do get that question a lot, that people say, I never saw cranes here. And the next year there was 5, 10, 50, insert number here. And so that is likely what you're seeing, is just birds that are using the landscape, and it might be due to flooding or snow melt, what have you. There may be water there one year and not the next, and it may appeal to cranes one year and not the next.
Hmm. I was also curious, how much territory do they need typically?
It is variable, and some of Wisconsin's just very, very productive wetlands, and it's what makes Wisconsin so productive agriculturally, is what makes Santo Crane so productive as well. They can have a very small territories and raise chicks successfully in a few acres. We've had nests that are only 10 meters apart in some wetlands, and so good fences make good neighbors with cranes as well.
Okay. And so, I'm sorry, go ahead. Did you have another question, Ross? No, we lost Russ. Okay. So Patrick in Watertown had also emailed in and wondered, they have two cranes that live near their home every year. Are these likely the same each year? It's probably quite...
It probably is. Yeah, they don't wear name tags. So there's never a sure way to know unless there is some sort of distinguishing mark, a scar, something like that on the birds. And that's why when we put color markers on our birds, we really know those individuals and how they move and how they're replaced over time on pairs and territories. And so we encourage people, if they're out and about or birding or just happen to notice cranes, if you wouldn't happen to look at their legs to notice any colored bands, there's actually a place on our website that www.bandedcranes.com. .org that you can get more information about our banding programs and others in the Eastern Flyway, and a place to report them, because, again, like Crane Count, it's a citizen science endeavor, and it's invaluable information for us.
Perfect. All right. Let's go to Ed in Lake Tomahawk next. Hello, Ed.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I was curious as to what the northern reach of the crane's habitat is.
For sandhills, they will nest up into central Minnesota. There are birds in northern Wisconsin and the UP of Michigan, and then on up into Ontario. They're not in the densities that we see them in the open agricultural areas of Wisconsin. So there's just
fewer
of them.
That's the reason I ask, because I hear a couple every spring, but not many. And there's obviously wet. I'm in northern Wisconsin, a lot of wetlands. But I just wondered if that was how many I should expect to be able to see in Oneida County.
Boy, crane count results are online.
Exactly, yes. Oneida is one of the counties currently participating in the crane count. So if you're interested, obviously, in participating in the count, you can go to the website, cranecount.org, and then also the past year's results are posted online. So you can find exactly how many cranes and pairs were counted during the crane count in Oneida County.
All right, very good. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And just to go along with the Northern Reaches issue, Cindy had emailed us, and she lives 25 miles north of Duluth, Minnesota, and there's a pair that returns and nests about 3 miles from she and her husband, and 2 years ago they successfully hatched a chick. So she was just wondering if that's common that far north.
It's I wouldn't say common, but it is certainly not not a surprise. Yeah, they just thin out as we get out of the agricultural areas.
Ann in Brookfield, you are next. Hi, Ann. Thank you
Hi,
for calling.
Hi. Good morning. I have a question. I live on the far eastern side of Waukesha County, and I'm wondering if that is a crane throughway. My situation is one. I think it was mid-October. I was out cleaning gutters and heard tons of cranes and watched wave after wave of them going over my house, which was really neat. And I live in pretty much a Milwaukee metropolitan area.
That's why you saw them flying over you. I think that, yeah, the birds that come out of northern Wisconsin and northern Michigan and Ontario funnel through, and they just follow that lake edge, and that's a great marker for them. And they can make it. There's a major staging area in Indiana, northwestern Indiana, in the fall, if anyone is interested in going to see thousands of cranes. Jasper-Pulaski Wildlife Area in Indiana. It's in the middle of nowhere, a bunch of cornfields, but it's perfect for cranes, and they can make it from Wisconsin to Jasper, Pulaski in a day. And so you saw those waves going over you, and they were aiming for Indiana, is my bet.
That is amazing, because I'm about 12 miles inland, so that is amazing. I figured they were following maybe one of the local creeks to get down that way.
Yeah, from that altitude, that they have a wonderful view of that lakeshore, and they probably just follow it just a straight line right over Chicago.
Excellent, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Ann mentioned the sound, and we got an email from Tom in Thief River Falls, and it's kind of a fun story. He said, when my children were very young, they loved the Jurassic Park movies. I took advantage of that fact and had them convinced for years that sandhill cranes that stay on our property were pterodactyls. My daughter was kind enough to let me go for about a year before she confided that she knew they were really cranes.
I'm glad that she let him continue that. They are sometimes they're not very far removed from dinosaurs. It's really they're that amazing creatures.
Prehistoric sounding call.
Yep.
It's wonderful. Well, we had someone who called in and said, could you give phone numbers in addition to websites? And she doesn't have a computer at home and wants to get involved. And
we never want to assume that the interwebs are everywhere, but we don't want to assume. Yeah. So we do have phone numbers.
If you're interested in participating in the crane count, you can call Joan Garland at 608-356-9462, and my extension is 142. And just let me know which county you're interested in counting, participating, and then I can get you in contact with the coordinator for that area.
So your phone again, it's area 608-306-9462. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the extension is 142.
Exactly.
All right. 356-9462, extension 142. There you have it. Let's go to John and DeForest next. John, hello.
Hello. I have two quick questions. I'll take my answer off the air. First, my wife and I saw several whooping cranes last year, late spring, just north of DeForest, where Highway 22 and Highway 51 split off. They were there for an entire day. There were, I remember, three or four of them. Just wondering how often they stop along the way, or if they were going to be in that area for a while. And then my other question was the frequency of, I see deer and sandhill cranes in the same field, if there's any kind of interdependence between the species there. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
Those are great observations. If I'm remembering the pairs that were near DeForest, or the birds, they may have been pairs or not. They were likely young birds, and so much like I was describing with the sandhills, they kind of wander around the area. Some of the birds, when they return from their first migration from Florida, the whooping cranes, they will go right back to Nisida, because that's what they know as home. And then they hit there, and they say, okay, well, I don't have a nest, I'm not going to be laying any eggs. I can wander the state. And so, again, they stay anywhere from a day to a month in any place. And so they're kind of trying out places, and sometimes they do set up territories eventually, and that's some of the research that we're doing, is trying to figure out exactly what choices they're making on the landscape about where to set up future territories. So they may return to that area, or they may not. You never know. And the second question,
deer,
yes. I think corn, unfortunately, is the common denominator. Not so much the spring corn, like the cranes tend to damage, although deer can damage corn in spring, but they like that waste corn. They like that open area. They can see what's coming. It's a safe place for them. So it's more that they like to share that common area. And I've seen them together also. They completely ignore each other.
All right. Let's go to David in Iron Ridge, Michigan next. Hi, David.
Yes, I'm just sort of curious what other animals cranes maybe not ignore. You know, what birds would they chase out of the area, and how do they interact with the ecosystem? And what could they, by counting the cranes, tell about the health of the ecosystem, global warming, and other stuff like that?
Okay.
As far as other animals, I was observing a crane very close up one time, and all of a sudden he became very alert, alarm calling, and very agitated, and I saw a turkey come out of the brush. And he, if a crane can look embarrassed, I think it was. Because it immediately went, oh, never mind. I didn't do that. I hope nobody saw. So they're really not aggressive or really take notice of much else, other birds or animals, other than other cranes, because, again, they're highly territorial, or potential predators such as coyotes. I have seen coyotes give cranes a very wide berth. So apparently they once bitten, twice shy, as far as the coyote is concerned.
And in terms of how they fit in the ecosystem?
Yeah. Cranes are a wonderful indicator species because they are very visible. And, you know, we can see via crane count, we can see how they are dispersing themselves across the landscape. Counters that have had zero, zero, zeros for years on their wetland, all of a sudden they finally have two or four cranes. And that is such great information because we're seeing that cranes may be leaving some wetlands because they're becoming overgrown, because they may have been ditched, or other areas are becoming more favorable. Likewise, there are so many cranes out there that they may be choosing wetlands that we would term subpar as far as nesting.
Marginal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they apparently like them enough. Mm-hmm. So they're indicators of that. As far as global warming, there's way too many variables involved that I don't know how that they could indicate that, although there is the phenology of cranes returning and things like that, much like other migratory birds. But they're also racing back in the spring to get their territory because there's a lot of competition out there. So yeah. It's much more immediate than any climate change.
Okay. Thanks again for calling. You can join us, too. We have some open lines at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Joan, when we count, what are we? Are we counting by sight? Are we counting by sound?
Both. Exactly. You're counting both by sight and sound. Many times it's actually easier to hear the cranes than it is to see them, especially if it's a foggy morning, for instance. So we do. We record both cranes that people visibly see and then also those that they hear. We always like to recommend, as you're counting by those birds that you hear, to take notes as far as the direction that the sound is coming from. And then that way, hopefully, you won't be counting the same bird throughout the course of the 2 hours. But yes, we do record both sight and sound during the count. And it's also it's important to note, as Anne was talking about, monitoring the long-term trends in the crane population. For those people that are out counting, even if you don't see or hear any cranes during that two-hour period, that is still very important information. So definitely, if you're out there, and unfortunately the area you're in, still note that there weren't any cranes present, because that's important data as well. And then also I should mention that the count itself occurs every year on one date. Again, this year it is April 17th from 5:30 to 7:30. And if folks unfortunately aren't able to go out that Saturday, or if the weather happens to be extremely bad in your area and you're not interested in counting, we ask that you just wait again until the next year, because it is very important to basically be consistent and avoid double counting, that we have the count on that one particular day in time.
So even if it's nasty weather and...
If you can bear it, if it's raining and cold, and if you can bear it...
The cranes will still be there.
Exactly. The cranes will be out there.
They're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Obviously, we don't encourage, if there's lightning in the area, safety first for everybody. But yes, if you can bear it, the cranes will still be out there.
Let's go to Mark in Madison next. Mark, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a longtime crane counter in Dane County. I've counted every year since 1977 or 1978. And I had a comment and I guess a question about the history and the origin of the crane count. I thought, from my recollection, that the Wisconsin Wetlands Association had something to do with the founding of the crane count and having it as an exercise to not only help monitor the population of sandhill cranes, but also to get people out into wetlands to experience the good things about wetlands and their value and stuff like that. So I wanted to know if you had heard anything or about that in terms of its history. And then the second thing I wanted to mention is we have land up in northern Wisconsin in Vilas County, about 6 miles south of the border with the UP. And about 2 years ago, we heard sandhills in the marsh that feed our lake for the very first time. So my conundrum now is, how do I count two places at once? But anyway.
Thanks, Mark. And comments?
Well, to go back to the first part of your question with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, I'm not entirely sure, to tell you the truth, but they are obviously an incredible organization and do a lot of work for wetlands across the state. The count itself, as I had mentioned, it started in 1976, but it really didn't take off as a citizen science monitoring program until about 1981, 82. So in those early years, a lot of folks within the state, you know, really kind of helped to make the count become the large count that it is today. So again, yes, that is another great organization to become a part of. But I myself, Anne, are you?
It sounds entirely reasonable that it would have been, because it started in Columbia County, and I know that that's an area where there's a lot of people with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. So I just don't know the history, but that's entirely plausible.
And as far as counting in two places at once, it's a little difficult unless you can clone yourself. We do have folks that can count if there's two sites that literally are adjoining, butting right up to one another, then you can have the opportunity to sort of count both sites. Vilas County does participate in the crane count. So if you can send another family member or something up there, that would be my best recommendation.
And again, let's go back to how people get signed up to participate in the count, which is this Saturday, 5:30 start time to 7:30, so you get 2 hours, and then go get some breakfast someplace.
Yep.
It sounds like a great family opportunity as well as just for an individual. And you can, two ways, you can call or you can go online. And how do we... Where do we go?
To go online, you would go to www.cranecount.org or email cranecount@savingcranes.org or call 608-356-9462, extension 142. So those are the three ways to get involved. And again, we encourage everybody to come out this coming Saturday.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Are you going to be up and at them at 5:30?
Absolutely.
And Ann, you too?
Doing some sort of crane work, yes. Yes, I will.
All right. Well, thank you both very much for coming by and being with us today. It was a great pleasure, and I hope you'll come back and do this again.
This is great fun. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Joan Garland is the outreach coordinator. Ann Lacey is the long-term crane research coordinator for the International Crane Foundation at Baraboo, Wisconsin. And what a fun experience to get to go out and look for cranes and hear those cranes. And I tell you what, it's an experience. I know there are a lot of repeaters on this because once you do it once, then a lot of times, as one of our earlier callers has been doing it since the late 70s, and every year obviously he enjoys it or wouldn't be going back for 30 years in a row. You might find yourself in the same boat. And it'll be a pleasurable boat to be in. So go to that cranecount.org, call 608-356-9462, extension 142. And what was the other one again?
It is cranecount@savingcranes.org. That is the email address.
All right. Thanks, Joan. And thanks to you as well, Ann, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Coming up, we're going to take a look at stargazing. You know, it's spring. We've got Astronomy Day coming up Saturday, April 24th. And Paul Kinzer back from Galesville, Wisconsin to talk with us about the stars. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.